We're always hearing why we can't have what we want. Now you're just being unreasonable. Yeah, I understand that we can afford it, but come on. Why are you so demanding? Yeah, we'll get to that eventually. You've expressed clearly what you want, but I don't think it's ever gonna happen. Oh, you think you can find someone else who will give you that? Well, good luck with that. So here are some more pithy nuggets of wisdom from Caitlin Johnstone. Democrats want to lose the midterms. Notes from the edge of the narrative matrix. Americans, we're dying. Republicans, good. Democrats, we hear you and we honor your experience. The USA is the single worst human rights offender on our planet. The fact that most of its transgressions take place outside its own borders makes it more egregious, not less. So-called human rights watchdog groups which fail to acknowledge this fact are propaganda constructs. By 2024, the only mainstream U.S. political debate allowed will be about whether America should nuke Russia or China. Kindly let me help you or you will drown, said the monkey, putting the fish safely up a tree, by Alan Watts. Interventionist foreign policy in a nutshell. In other words, we're putting a lot of foreign countries up in a tree when they would rather be in the water. It's kind of like missionaries do. War is insanity. Unjust war is criminal insanity. One of the ugliest things about Western imperialism is the way it gives extremely young soldiers whose minds have been warped by a criminally insane war machine the power of life and death over defenseless populations. I'll break in here and say that I had that very conversation with the class I teach. Many of my students, and I have to say I felt the same way growing up, want service in the military to be honorable. They want to think that those with the highest levels of integrity are the ones that enter the service. Selfless devotion is what they think. But if after a good education you understand the criminal insanity of war, then you have to say it isn't honorable, it doesn't show integrity, it isn't one of the highest aspirations of humanity to enter the military. You have to look at yourself in the mirror and you have to judge your own morals. Even though we've been taught to think of military service as selfless devotion and we thank people for their service, what are they serving? They're not serving us. They're serving the oligarchs. They're defending oil fields. They're defending the U.S. Empire's economic interests. They're destroying harmless civilians, including children. Once you know the truth, there is no honor there. One very important thing you can do is keep finding new ways to help people see the horrors of imperialism with fresh eyes. It's also aggressively normalized, and it's been going on all our lives, so it's easy to get used to it and lose sight of how unspeakably horrific it is. Choosing to continue an immoral course of action is as immoral as initiating it. Presidents who continued the immoral policies of their predecessors are as culpable as the presidents who initiated them. The Democratic Party is corrupt and murderous beyond the possibility of redemption, and anyone who says otherwise is either deceived or deceiving. I'm seeing U.S. progressive / DSA types getting more and more agitated about the sudden increase in hostility toward the Democrats from the left. What did they think was going to happen when the Dems took control of the entire government? You're the power now, Buttercup. The problem with warning that the $2,000 check scandal will lead to losses in the midterms is that Democrats are fine with losing in the midterms. You think they like having to own all their right-wing bullshit for themselves? Democrats hate being exposed and vulnerable like this. They much prefer to blame their corporate cronyism, austerity policies, and warmongering on an obstructionist Republican Congress. They're happy to lose the midterms. They prefer to lose the midterms. The easiest way to look cool is to fight the power. The easiest way to get rich is to serve the power. The easiest way to look cool and get rich is to serve power while appearing to fight it. And I'm sure, dear viewers and listeners, that you're aware of many so-called lefty pundits who are serving in that capacity right now. Democrats are absolutely correct that it is of paramount importance for the Republicans to be held accountable for their atrocious crimes, lest those crimes repeat themselves in the future. Start with the Bush administration. Immense military and financial commitments are made to Israel on the grounds that it's the only democracy in the Middle East. But also, if you try holding it to the same standards as other democracies, you're a Nazi. And also, Israel is not a democracy. Obviously. If I saw someone criticizing the many, many horrible things the Australian government has done, it would never in a million years occur to me to rush to Australia's defense. Yet I interact with people hastening to defend the US empire on a daily basis. These people are silly. Silly is one word you could use. World peace and inner peace are not separate endeavors. Go deep enough into one and you'll eventually find yourself working on the other as well. If humanity can't collectively transcend egoic consciousness, it won't matter if the revolution succeeds. Even if we create worldwide utopia, we'll only end up destroying it out of boredom. Conflicts with each other and with nature will keep rebirthing until inner conflicts vanish. And now we leap over to Glenn Greenwald. Reflecting the authoritarian climate, Washington will remain militarized until at least March. The idea of troops in U.S. streets for an extended period of time, an extreme measure even when temporary, has now become close to a sacred consensus. The caption under this photo reads, National Guard soldiers assembled near the U.S. Capitol 2 days after the inauguration of U.S. President Joe Biden on January 22, 2021 in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. has been continuously militarized beginning the week leading up to Joe Biden's inauguration when 20,000 National Guard troops were deployed onto the streets of the nation's capital. The original justification was that this show of massive force was necessary to secure the inauguration in light of the January 6th riot at the Capitol. That wasn't a riot. That was a pretend riot. That was a little bunny foo-foo riot. But with the inauguration over and done, those troops remain and are not going anywhere anytime soon. Working with federal law enforcement agencies, the National Guard Bureau announced on Monday that between 5,000 and 7,000 troops will remain in Washington until at least mid-March. The rationale for this extraordinary, sustained domestic military presence has shifted several times, typically from anonymous U.S. law enforcement officials. The original justification, the need to secure the inaugural festivities, is obviously no longer operative. So the new claim became that the impeachment trial of former President Trump that will take place in the Senate in February necessitated military reinforcements. On Sunday, Politico quoted four people familiar with the matter to claim that Trump's upcoming Senate impeachment trial poses a security concern that federal law enforcement officials told lawmakers last week requires as many as 5,000 National Guard troops to remain in Washington through mid-March. The next day, AP, citing a U.S. official, said the ongoing troop deployment was needed due to ominous chatter about killing legislators or attacking them outside of the U.S. Capitol. They made that shit up. But the anonymous official acknowledged that the threats that law enforcement agents are tracking vary in specificity and credibility. Well, you are certainly lacking in specificity and credibility, Mr. Official. Even National Guard troops complained that they have so far been given no official justifications, threat reports, or any explanation for the extended mission, nor have they seen any violence thus far. Meanwhile, their families wait for them to come home. Some of them are my students. This is so fucking ridiculous. It is hard to overstate what an extreme state of affairs it is to have a sustained military presence in American streets. Prior deployments have been rare and usually were approved for a limited period and/or in order to quell a very specific ongoing uprising, to ensure the peaceful segregation of public schools in the South, to respond to the unrest in Detroit and Chicago in the 1960s, or to quell the 1991 Los Angeles riots that erupted after the Rodney King trial. And I know, Glenn, you're not saying that you approve of any of those quellings. Deploying National Guard or military troops for domestic law enforcement purposes is so dangerous that laws in place from the country's founding strictly limit its use. It is meant only as a last resort, when concrete, specific threats are so overwhelming that they cannot be quelled by regular law enforcement absent military reinforcements. Deploying active military troops is an even graver step than putting National Guard soldiers on the streets, but they both present dangers. As Trump's defense secretary said in response to calls from some over the summer to deploy troops in response to the Black Lives Matter and Antifa protests, the option to use active duty forces in a law enforcement role should only be used as a matter of last resort and only in the most urgent and dire of situations. Sounds to me, dear viewers and listeners, that our government is getting pretty nervous right now. Glenn posits, Are we even remotely at such an extreme state where ordinary law enforcement is insufficient? The January 6th riot at the Capitol would have been easily repelled with just a couple hundred more police officers. The U.S. is the most militarized country in the world and has the most paramilitarized police force on the planet. Earlier today, the acting chief of the Capitol Police acknowledged that they had advanced knowledge of what was planned but failed to take the necessary steps to police it. Duh! Future violent acts in the name of right-wing extremism, as well as other causes, is highly likely, if not inevitable. But the idea that the country faces some sort of existential armed insurrection that only the military can suppress is laughable on its face. Yeah, what they don't want, Glenn, is for us to get any kind of leverage that we could use for political purposes. That's why Biden's military forces are there in our way. They don't want we, the people, to flex our muscles and demand some wild-ass thing like Medicare for all. Biden and the deep state want to keep us in our places. They want to keep us doing our fucking jobs without complaining too much. They want to throw us a few meaningless gestures to keep us boiling in our pot. The last thing they want is for us to leap out, and that, in a nutshell, is why the military is in the streets. Back to Glenn. Recall that ABC News on January 11th, citing an internal FBI bulletin, that sounds spooky, obtained by ABC News, claimed that starting this week and running through at least Inauguration Day, armed protests are being planned at all 50 state capitals and at the U.S. Capitol. The news outlet added in highly dramatic and alarming tones, "The FBI has also received information in recent days on a group calling for storming state, local, and federal government courthouses and administrative buildings in the event President Donald Trump is removed from office prior to Inauguration Day. The group is also planning to storm government offices in every state the day President-elect Joe Biden will be inaugurated, regardless of whether the state certified electoral votes for Biden or for Trump." None of that happened. There was virtually no unrest or violence during Inauguration Week, except for some anti-Biden protests held by leftist and anarchist protesters that resulted in a few smashed windows at the Oregon Democratic Party and some vandalism at a Starbucks in Seattle. But I'll break in here and say that that's what they're most afraid of. And perhaps even more afraid are they of these leftists uniting with right-wingers. So-called right-wingers. Back to the story. "Trump supporters threatened state capitals but failed to show on Inauguration Day," was the headline NBC News chose to try to justify this gap between media claims and reality. This threat seems wildly overblown by the combination of media outlets looking for ratings, law enforcement agencies searching for power, and Democratic Party operatives eager to exploit the climate of fear for a new war on terror. But now is not a moment when there is much space for questioning anything, especially not measures ostensibly undertaken in the name of combating white supremacist right-wing extremism, just as no questioning of supposed security measures was tolerated in the wake of the 9/11 attack. And so the scenes of soldiers on the streets of the nation's capital, there in the thousands and for an indefinite period of time, is provoking little to no concern. What makes this all the more remarkable is that a mere 7 months ago, a major controversy erupted when the New York Times published an op-ed by Senator Tom Cotton, which at its core advocated the deployment of military troops to quell the social unrest, protests, and riots that erupted over the summer after the killing in Minneapolis of George Floyd. To justify the deployment of National Guard and active duty military forces, Cotton emphasized how many people, including police officers, had been seriously maimed or even killed as part of that unrest. "Outnumbered police officers, encumbered by feckless politicians, bore the brunt of the violence. In New York State, rioters ran over officers with cars on at least three occasions. In Las Vegas, an officer is in grave condition after being shot in the head by a rioter. In St. Louis, four police officers were shot as they attempted to disperse a mob throwing bricks and dumping gasoline. In a separate incident, a 77-year-old retired police captain was shot to death as he tried to stop looters from ransacking a pawn shop. This is somebody's granddaddy," a bystander screamed at the scene. That was all a quotation from Tom Cotton's article. Cotton's claim that police officers bore the brunt of the violence was questionable given how many protesters were also killed or maimed, but it is true that numerous police officers were attacked, including fatally. Cotton acknowledged that the central cause of the protest was a just one, noting they were provoked by the wrongful death of George Floyd. He also strongly affirmed the right of people to peacefully protest in support of that cause, accusing those justifying the violence of a revolting moral equivalence of rioters and looters to peaceful, law-abiding protesters, adding, "A majority who seek to protest peacefully shouldn't be confused with bands of miscreants." Indeed. But he insisted that absent military reinforcements, innocent people, principally ones in poor communities, will suffer. "These rioters, if not subdued, not only will destroy the livelihoods of law-abiding citizens, but will also take more innocent lives," Cotton wrote, adding, "Many poor communities that still bear scars from past upheavals will be set back still further." The backlash to the publication of this op-ed was immediate, intense, and at least in my memory, unprecedented. Very few people were interested in engaging the merits of Cotton's call for a deployment of troops in order to prove the argument was misguided. Their view was not that Cotton's plea for soldiers in the streets was misguided, but that advocacy for it was so obscene, so extremist, so dangerous and repugnant that the mere publication of the op-ed by the paper of record was an act of grave immorality. I'll probably get in trouble for this, but to not say something would be immoral. As a black woman, as a journalist, I am deeply ashamed that we ran this, pronounced the paper's Nicole Hannah-Jones in a now-deleted tweet. The New York Times Magazine writer Taffy Brodesser Ackner posted a multi-tweet denunciation that compared Cotton to an anti-Semite who says, "The Jew is a pig," argued that hatred dressed up as opinion is not something I have to withstand, and concluded with this flourish, "I love working at the Times, and most days of the week I'm very proud to be part of its mission, but tonight I understand the people who treat me like I work at a tobacco company." Former New York Times editor and Huffington Post editor-in-chief Lydia Polgreen announced, also in a now-deleted tweet, "I spent some of the happiest and most productive years of my life working for the New York Times. So it is with love and sadness that I say, running this puts black New York Times staff and many, many others in danger. That publication of the Cotton op-ed puts black New York Times staff in danger became a mantra recited by more journalists than one can list." Two editors, including the paper's editorial page editor, James Bennett, and a young assistant editor, Adam Rubinstein, were forced out of their jobs in the middle of a pandemic for the crime not of endorsing Cotton's argument, but merely airing it. Media reports attributed their departure to a staff revolt. The paper itself appended a major editor's note, "We have concluded that the essay fell short of our standards and should not have been published." In addition to alleged flaws in the editorial process, the paper also said, "The tone of the essay in places is needlessly harsh and falls short of the thoughtful approach that advances useful debate." There is a meaningful difference between deploying National Guard troops and active duty soldiers on American streets, but both measures are extraordinary, create a climate of militarization, have a history of resulting in excessive force against citizens engaged in peaceful protest and constitutionally protected dissent, and present threats and dangers to civil liberties far beyond ordinary use of law enforcement. You see what Glenn did here, right, dear viewers and listeners? He again showed the utter hypocrisy of New York Times editors and writers. Why were they denouncing the employment of the U.S. military in those situations, but not in other situations? Make no mistake, this kind of authoritarianism is useful when you're trying to keep people in their sheep pens. All of this is to keep us from revolting. And frankly, just knowing about it, just becoming aware of how it's being done, makes me very much want to get out of that sheep pen. That's probably why The Intercept was so uncomfortable with Glenn Greenwald. Anytime he calls attention to the Democratic side of the problem, people want to censor him. Back to Glenn for the stunning conclusion. Why was the idea of troops in American streets so grotesque and offensive in June 2020, but so normalized now? Why were these troops likely to indiscriminately arrest and murder black reporters and other journalists over the summer, but are now trusted to protect them? And what does it say about the current climate and the serious dangers it poses that the public is being trained so easily to acquiesce to extreme measures in the name of domestic security? We are witnessing the media and their public treat what ought to be regarded with great suspicion as not only normal but desirable, all through the manipulation of fears and inflation of threats. That does not bode well for those who seek to impede the imminent attempt to begin a new domestic war on terror.